So, like, you're gonna face a lot of unjust in your own country sometimes, but yes.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned your time in the West Bank. You've been living in the U.S. for nearly a decade. After leaving the occupied West Bank, where you grew up with your father, you came to this country to reunite with your mother, who's a U.S. citizen. Talk about that, your time, the comparisons you're raising, your time as a child in the West Bank.
And we just have 30 seconds.
I mean, I grew up under a military occupation. I grew up getting used to, if I want to go to school, I would go through a checkpoint, a military checkpoint. I was 9 years old, and I woke up on an Israeli soldier pointing his rifle at on my face and laughing, literally laughing. I've seen my father being humiliated many times by the Israeli soldier. I experienced bombing, gas bombs. I've seen people dying in front of my eyes. Like, a father was shopping with his daughter, and he's just got killed for nothing.
I hate to cut you off. We have to end it there.
No,
thank you so much, Lakhach Cordia. For you to be here in studio means so much.
I appreciate
Palestinian protester released from a Texas ICE jail after a year.
Thank you.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through our public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Siren Nation, presenting Lady Sings the Blues, a tribute to Billie Holiday, on Saturday, April 4th at the Alberta Rose Theatre. Tickets and information are available at albertarosetheatre.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon measles cases reach 13 and officials warn of a wider risk.
Oregon joins 22 states in a lawsuit to block a Trump executive order restricting mail-in voting.
And in national news, advocates push for more protections for kids on the internet.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 3rd, 2026. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Robert Barncord. Measles cases have climbed in Oregon in 2026, with the state health authority tracking 13 confirmed cases this year. Measles was nearly eradicated in the United States because of wide usage of its highly effective vaccine. Health officials say 12 of those 13 cases are in people who are unvaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. OHA shared information about possible sites of transmission, including several in the Portland metro area. The most recent exposure site was the Safeway at Southeast Hawthorne and 28th in Portland. Health officials advise anyone who visited the store on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday of last week should contact their health provider about a possible exposure. Measles is a highly contagious disease. It's spread by respiratory droplets that can linger in the air for up to 2 hours after an infected person has left the area. Dr. Dean Seidlinger is the Oregon State Health Officer.
Those 13 cases that have been reported to public health are only the tip of the iceberg. These cases, with the exception of some cases that were linked in households, have primarily not been linked to other cases and are not occurring in travelers from areas experiencing measles outbreak, though some are. But what we know from looking at measles detection in the wastewater is that we're seeing measles detected in wastewater in counties that don't have any measles cases reported or that don't have any current kind of measles cases reported at the time. So we know that measles is much more widespread in the state than that number 13 represents.
The first symptoms of measles often look like a cold, coughing, runny nose, red eyes. The telling symptom for measles is a rash that starts on the face and spreads across the body. People are contagious from 4 days before they show symptoms up to 2 days after their rash starts. So far, the measles cases haven't hit large groups of unvaccinated children, which drove major outbreaks in Texas and in South Carolina. Most people who are unvaccinated and contract measles will have a mild case, and those who have been vaccinated are at very low risk. Health officials say they're 97% protected. But kids under 5 are at much greater risk of hospitalization or death. For kids and adults who aren't vaccinated and get the measles, they can still get the vaccine, which can help lessen the infection, or some people may be eligible for immune therapy if they can't get the vaccine. Public health researchers estimate the measles vaccine saved the lives of 94 million children across the world between 1974 and 2004 as vaccine programs spread.
Oregon has joined 22 other states in suing the Trump administration to block the president's vote-by-mail order. Trump issued an order on Tuesday directing federal agencies to make lists of citizens eligible to vote in each state and require the Postal Service to send ballots only to quote-unquote verified voters. The Constitution does not give the president power over elections. Individual states run elections, and Congress is allowed to enact changes. Dan Rayfield is the Attorney General of Oregon.
Earlier this week, when President Trump announced that he was going to introduce his elections executive order, 23 states got together to examine that and prepare to file a lawsuit to prohibit the president from taking action. Today, that lawsuit was filed in Massachusetts earlier today by all 23 states because it was incredibly important that we operated in unison in pushing back against the president. The reality is this: the president has not and never will have the power to regulate elections here in the United States of America and respectively in our states. This is a role that was intentionally put into the hands of Congress and states, and the president does not get to usurp that power. I think it's important because we're here in Oregon to look at the history of vote by mail because we are a pioneering state. In the 1980s, we first started pioneering vote by mail, and it was eventually made permanent. And both of those bills that passed through the Oregon legislature were signed by Republican Governor Vic Attia. It's 2026. In 1996, 30 years ago, Oregon became the first state to actually hold the first state in the nation election by vote by mail. 30 years of Republican secretaries of states, Democratic secretaries of state, talking about how the elections we have here in Oregon have integrity and are inaccurate. We've had 30 years of county clerks in red states or counties and county clerks in blue counties, talking about how our system here in Oregon, vote by mail, is accurate and has integrity.
Trump has made a number of attempts to control elections since taking office for the second time. A 2025 executive order sought to require citizens to submit proof of citizenship to register to vote and to require all ballots to be received by Election Day. That was struck down by the courts. Trump is also pushing the so-called SAVE Act to do some of those same things, though that bill is currently stuck in the Senate. Rayfield says the Trump administration's attempts to make major changes to how elections are run is about one thing.
This is about control. The president is incredibly unpopular right now because he's taking and doing unpopular things, whether it's pulling back health care, whether it's pulling back food assistance, or whether it's wars of choice in Iran. His polling numbers are showing that. And when politicians start to see that they're losing power or their grip on control, they start to implement ideas and thoughts on elections to maintain that control and power. And you've seen that during this last year.
Rayfield says the state of Oregon has filed 61 cases against the Trump administration since 2025.
A warming climate has extended mosquito season in parts of Oregon by over a month, and rising populations of the insects are growing resistant to common insecticides. In response, University of Washington scientists have identified a chemical that repels them, along with how mosquitoes detect it, paving the way for more effective repellents. KBOO's Laurie Wandell reports.
The threat of a rare but deadly disease is rising alongside mosquito populations in the Northwest. In response, scientists are researching how mosquitoes detect a common compound in natural repellents. A warming climate has lengthened mosquito season in the Northwest in some places by over a month. Jeffrey Reifel at the University of Washington says that the problem is not just that mosquito populations are increasing, they are also becoming resistant to common insecticides.
These are chemicals like permethrin and others used to control local mosquito populations, or even ones that we'd spray on ourselves. And so we really need to find ways to prevent mosquitoes.
Reifel says his international team has identified the receptor on mosquitoes' antenna that detects borneol, a chemical used in natural insect repellents. With this information, Reifel plans to identify new chemicals that could be even more repellent to the bugs. He says borneol smells good and is common in many aromatic plants, like rosemary. Reifel says the team is also using CRISPR gene editing technology to create genetically modified mosquitoes that cannot detect borneol. He explains that being able to turn off the gene that makes mosquitoes avoid the compound allows them to test how effective it is.
When we do that, we have these mosquito strains that can't smell this borneol repellent. They don't really care anymore, whereas the wild type that we have around us are really highly repelled.
Reifel says this work is timely because with a warming climate, mosquitoes are moving north, along with the diseases that they carry. He says that mosquitoes that carry dengue and Zika virus are already present in California and could be as far north as Seattle in as few as 50 years. For KBOO News and Oregon News Service, I'm Laurie Wandell.
In national news, U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi has been fired. President Trump raises tariffs on imported prescription drugs, and voting rights experts develop a model bill to prevent ICE agents from being sent to local polling places. With those stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This administration released over 3 million pages of documents, over 3 million, and Donald Trump signed that law to release all of those documents.
Pam Bondi is out as Attorney General under criticism for her handling of legal files on the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Bondi remade the Justice Department to fit President Donald Trump's agenda of retribution and election denialism, but sources say the president had become frustrated about being repeatedly blocked in court. Former Trump personal lawyer Todd Blanche will take over as acting AG, and EPA Director Lee Zeldin is reportedly being eyed as the permanent replacement. Trump allies say the White House should send ICE agents to monitor polling places this fall, and now acting AG Blanche says that would be reasonable. Watchdogs say it would clearly be illegal voter intimidation. Patrick Berry with the Brennan Center says the problem would be getting that federal law enforced in time, which is why the center has produced a model bill that legislatures could use to also make it illegal under state law.
Because only the Department of Justice can prosecute people who engage in that type of conduct under federal law, it seems unlikely the current DOJ would do that.
After threatening to do so during negotiations, Trump is imposing a 100% tariff on imported brand-name pharmaceutical drugs from companies which have involuntarily lowered prices. White House Trade Representative Jameson Greer says the drug makers are now rushing to make deals to avoid the import taxes.
We have spent the past year hammering out deals with a lot of these companies to make sure they're building in America, which they are. We see concrete going demand superstructures going up on new pharmaceutical facilities, companies that are agreeing to charge less here in the United States for their drugs, which they're agreeing to do.
Though a federal judge blocked further construction on a new White House ballroom, the National Capital Planning Commission gave the project its final approval. NCPC Chairman William Scharf says White House construction projects across administrations are historically unpopular despite their necessity.
While some might wish for history and the world to stand still, the fact of the matter is that the White House complex has constantly evolved to meet the programmatic needs of the federal government and the office of the president, which it houses.
In Trump's national address on the Iran war, he said it is the responsibility of other nations to reopen the vital Strait of Hormuz. U.S. allies, including U.K. Prime Minister Keir Starmer, say they don't want to get involved, even as they're working to avoid pushing Trump towards a threatened break with NATO and Europe.
Whatever the pressure on me and others, whatever the noise, I'm going to act in the British national interest in all the decisions that I make. And that's why I've been absolutely clear that this is not our war, and we're not going to get dragged into it.
The day after Trump's address, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth fired the Army's top general along with two other high-ranking officers. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the U.S. and Israel should immediately stop attacks that are, quote, inflicting immense human suffering. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A Supreme Court ruling on a conversion therapy ban in Colorado may spell trouble for a similar ban in Maryland. While the ruling may allow for conversion therapy across the country, LGBTQ advocates still slam the practice as ineffective and harmful. Zamon Perez has more.
A law in Maryland meant to ban conversion therapy is on shaky ground following a Supreme Court ruling. Officials now grapple with how to move forward. The Supreme Court issued an 8-1 ruling that a Colorado law banning conversion therapy violates the free speech rights of a therapist in the state. Maryland is one of nearly two dozen states in Washington, D.C., with laws that ban conversion therapy on the books. Angela DeLara with GLAAD, an LGBTQ civil rights group, says the ruling wasn't a verdict on if the practice is helpful.
It wasn't a verdict on whether so-called conversion therapy is safe or effective, because it's not. Conversion practices are proven to be dangerous and have been discredited for decades, not only because they're ineffective, but because those who undergo it suffer devastating harm.
Supporters of conversion therapy argue there is more than one way to provide care to LGBTQ individuals, and that state laws have served as a de facto gag order that limits the freedoms of mental health providers and patients. Major medical associations like the American Psychological Association oppose conversion therapy, arguing it violates medical professionals' oaths to do no harm to patients. DeLara says young people should be supported, not ridiculed, for their identity.
Young people should be met with support and best practice healthcare when they access mental health services, not fear or shame from so-called providers who want to force them to change who they are.
Democratic Governor Wes Moore said in a statement that he was reviewing the ruling with the state attorney general to understand the implications for Maryland's law. I'm Simone Perez, Maryland News Connection.
Listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 38 degrees, and tomorrow's weather will be sunny with a high of 70. Today in history, in 2016, the Panama Papers were leaked, revealing information on over 200,000 offshore companies. The legal documents exposed a network of shell companies linked to the global financial elite, including many government leaders. The quote of the day is from English writer William Hazlitt, who wrote, quote, "Man is the only animal that laughs and weeps, for he is the only animal that is struck with the difference between what things are and what they might have been."
Arctic landfast ice is forming later and breaking up earlier, a new report says, which has big implications for the climate, for resource development, and subsistence hunting. With that story and more is Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas. Arctic sea ice has been shrinking in recent decades, reaching record lows both in summer and in winter. A new study shows a continuation of this trend. Ice is sticking to Alaska's northern shores for less time than it used to. Researchers say this can have implications for the climate, resource development, and subsistence hunting. The Alaska Desk's Aliona Niden reports.
Andrew Mahoney is a research professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute. In January, he and his colleague published a study in the Journal of Geophysical Research, Oceans. It focused on the ice that attaches to the shores of Alaska's northern coast, called landfast ice. They found that over nearly three decades, the landfast ice in Alaska's Arctic is forming later, breaking up earlier, and is not reaching as far offshore.
So it's sort of shrinking in time and it's shrinking in space as well.
Mahoney previously looked at the landfast ice in Chukchi and Beaufort Seas in a study published in 2014. At that time, the Chukchi Sea seemed to experience more ice loss, while the Beaufort Sea seemed more stable. This year's study showed that that has changed. Mahoney says that while landfast ice is only a small fraction of the overall ice cover, it is the type of ice most people come in contact with. Indigenous communities have used it for millennia to hunt, like whalers in Utqiagvik in spring.
A large fraction of the community at any one time might actually be out on the landfast ice actively whaling, and the success of that whale hunt is in part related to how accessible and how stable and safe the landfast ice is.
Mahoney added that the oil and gas industry also uses landfast ice to build seasonal ice roads to connect to facilities. In fact, his team's study was funded by the Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management with the interest of oil and gas development near shore. When landfast ice breaks up earlier in spring, coastal communities lose a shield protecting them from the open water and waves.
There's a lot of erosion affecting these communities. Most of it happens in the fall, but we could start to see more erosion happening in the springtime if landfast ice keeps breaking up earlier.
The Arctic has been warming four times faster than the rest of the world. The recent landfast ice decline might be related to the overall thinning of Arctic ice due to climate change. But more research is needed to better understand the process behind it. In Anchorage, I'm Alona Knighton.
It was just election day for the 15,000-member White Mountain Apache tribe. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrasio reports, a new chairman has been named and hopes his administration can help change course.
The tribal radio station first announced official results late Wednesday.
KMND 88.1 FM, whatever, 89.9 FM, CBQ.
White River School Board member Orlando Carroll won the seat by 80 ballots. Over 4,200 votes were cast in that race. The chairman-elect celebrated with supporters.
You are the core of the Carroll administration.
Carroll promises stability and a brighter future after the tribe has had two different sitting chairmen within recent weeks. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrasio.
And I'm Jill Freitas.
Across the country, advocates are pushing for new laws after a landmark verdict found Meta and Google liable for a woman's childhood social media addiction. The ruling is seen as a major precedent that could hold tech platforms accountable for defective products. As Danielle Smith reports, Pennsylvania lawmakers recently introduced bipartisan legislation to create a task force on child protection in the digital age to keep children safe online.
Safeguards protecting children on social media are a top priority for parents and advocates across Pennsylvania and the nation. There's a new push after a landmark verdict found Meta and Google liable for being addictive to minors. At a news conference, Brief parent Juliana Arnold says big tech companies knew their platforms were hurting kids but chose profit anyway. She says her message to them is simple. There's a right thing to do and a wrong thing to do, and they're on the wrong side.
Stop blaming the parents. It's on you. And this is what this is showing today. And for parents, we now know that they were manipulating our children for profits while we were watching and trying to keep our families safe. They are the predators.
Research is still coming together, but a 2023 advisory from the U.S. Surgeon General says evidence suggests social media has the potential to harm the mental health of youth. Aside from proposals in U.S. Congress, three Pennsylvania lawmakers introduced bipartisan legislation to establish the Task Force on Child Protection in the Digital Age. The statewide initiative would aim to keep Pennsylvania child safety laws up to date with technical advances and emerging online risks. Jurors in a recent case in California agreed that both Meta and Google design platforms like Instagram and YouTube to be addictive. The plaintiff's lawyer, Mark Lanier, stresses the ruling serves as validation for the generations of people who have been affected by social media harms. He says it also sets a major precedent for future cases.
We've sent a message with this that you will be held accountable for the features, regardless of whether the children are getting sent pornographic pictures, regardless of whether they're being sexploitated, just because of the features alone that drive addiction, these companies can be held accountable.
Both companies plan to appeal and deny social media alone causes severe mental health issues. Lanier countered the ruling marks a significant shift towards treating the platforms as defective products and signals growing accountability for social media companies. For Keystone State News Connection, I'm Danielle Smith.
Portland is known for its micro-communities, springing up around common interests and niche hobbies. Some folks are building that community intentionally, like pinball enthusiast Nathan Stellhorn. KBOO's Eden Selman has the story.
In a world full of chaos and confusion, finding happiness and joy in everyday things is very important. For Nathan Stellhorn, that's pinball. Stellhorn started his pinball business, Lentz Pinball, to share his passion with pinball for others. Over the past 20 years, he actively hosted major events as well as bought, sold, traded, and fixed thousands of machines on pure passion. He's been a staple in Portland's growing pinball community. Stellhorn says pinball is an interesting and exciting game with many layers.
It is a pitched wooden playfield that's about 2.5 feet long with flippers at the bottom closest to the player. And a bunch of obstacles for you to use the flippers to hit a steel ball into and around with switches all over it that when you hit them, you score a certain amount of points.
For Stellhorn, his pinball journey was a story that was meant to be.
I was big into finding cheap deals on Craigslist or free stuff on Craigslist, and I once found a pinball machine. And I had been playing pinball a lot, but I found one to buy, and I went and bought it for very cheap. And taught myself how to fix it. Instead of looking for just stuff on Craigslist from there on out, I only looked for pinball machines and probably have bought 1,000+, fixed them, sold them, kept them, gifted them, traded them. So I just got the bug majorly and started collecting and hosting events and having way too much fun with it.
He is dedicated to helping the community dial into exciting new safe experiences that aren't centered around media or screens, a good way for people to truly connect in person with no limits.
I like providing a space for folks to have a good time when, I don't know, the world's a weird place right now, right? Like, there's a ton of rough stuff happening politically. We're in a war. Everything you see on the news is not that fun to see. And so I'm passionate about providing a space for people to get away from that, get their hands on a mechanical machine where a ball physically rolls around. It's not just a screen. Get them away from their screen, help get kids away from their screens, and do something that actually like exists in the real world, that you have your hands on, that you have control of, and you can have some fun while feeling like you're accomplishing some kind of goal, whether it's playing Pokemon pinball or playing an old game from the 70s and working towards a high score and working towards better flipper control and meeting people while you do it and kind of building a social community of people who are also interested in this same ridiculously fun and silly thing. So it's a lot of fun.
Most recently, Stellhorn got an exciting new machine that is catching the attention of many pinball enthusiasts in Portland.
Pokemon came out last week. It's from Stern Pinball. People have been anticipating it for a very, very long time. You can actually catch the Pokemon. Stern has an app for cell phones, which I know I just said, let's get away from our screens. But this app allows you to track the Pokemon you catch. I think they're actually going to have it set up so that you can trade them with friends, catch all the Pokemon, and do a couple of other things that they haven't rolled out with Pokemon Pinball. So it's a lot of fun, and the design of it's really neat. The art's really cool.
Community is very important to Stellhorn. He is constantly creating ways to keep people together with the events that he hosts at the Beer Bunker and the Zed in Portland.
Monday nights at the Zed and Wednesdays here at Beer Bunker are just a hoot. Like, if you are a fan of really good beer or really good non-alcoholic beverages, and playing games and meeting people and building skills around pinball and building community, you should come to one of these events. We started our first Wednesday weekly amateur pinball night, and those weekly amateur pinball nights are, I want to build up a community, and I want to help people to learn how to be better at pinball. If people want to learn how to work on or fix machines, cool, I want to meet you and I want to show you. I want to get folks to come to other competitive events with me and beat some of the other pinball nerds around town.
On top of tournaments, he's working on so many exciting things to showcase in the near future.
I have a big debut event coming up on April 20th, where I'm going to be doing an art show with a local artist named Mike Neeson. He's going to have 10 works of art there that will be for sale, and I'm going to have 10 pinball machines there that will be playable, and we'll also be doing a professional competitive classics pinball event where some of the best pinball players from around the West Coast are going to come and compete on these 70s games. So it's going to be a ton of fun.
More information can be found on his Instagram profile at Lentz_pinball. For KBOO News, I'm Eden Selman.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 3rd, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Lori Wandell and Eden Selman. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira.